The Wild Rose and the China Doll by Suzanne Conboy Hill. Read by Suzanne Conboy Hill. On a frozen beach, round waves thundering under a gritty pier and a grittier sky, God got his own back, and I burst sparkling into life. Eileen felt it, the sudden zing of it. Then she saw the trap of it, and tumbled right there and then from the dizzy updrafts of her new freedom. Jim did not. Not yet, anyway. But then he was not a mother. Neither was Eileen, but the expectations of head-scarved legions wove withering fetters of convention, tying off the fresh buds of love and escape, like wild roses strangled by murderous brambles. Jim and Eileen are newlyweds, embarking on a joined life that even the Catholic Church could not discourage. He is back from the war. She is a machinist, escaping industrial drudgery and a household in which she is, like the furniture, utilitarian. It is 1946. Had it been 1986, we would not be here, in this place. She vomited her way through a pregnancy that inflated her out of her smooth, fashionable pleats, and dumped her into the barrage balloons they called maternity frocks. She called herself fat. Jim called her his baby factory, and put away threepence a week for baby things. The fire is taking hold, flames licking, flicking over the curtains, and dancing among the blankets on the cot. There are firemen with hoses, with hatchets, chipping at bits of burning wood, and purging them with water. "This is hot," one of them hollers, pointing at the cooker. "This is where it started." But he is wrong. The cooker is part of the conspiracy, though, along with the fireplace that barely draws a draft, so the place stays cold as cave mud, and the gas lamps that do not light because the bills are not paid. Along, too, with the cracked windows that Jim stuffs with newspapers to keep the chill fingers of night out of their one room. The cooker is complicit by silently heating the half-strength feed they are making up. Eileen has not read the instructions because she stopped reading when the nuns started beating her. Jim will not read them because baby food is a woman's job. Eileen's days stink of child-rearing. Feces-encrusted nappies to wash in the stone sink under biting cold water. Clothes to drip and never quite dry before a fire darkening from lack of fuel. Feed to make up on a cooker that stutters and stays silent about important things. Jim shares the stink at night. At night he wears his overcoat and socks in bed and gets up to growl at neighbours who hammer on the door to complain about the baby screaming. Yesterday the rent collector called. Eileen handed to him the crumpled note and the rent book from the biscuit tin that has no crumbs in it. The man signed the rent book and handed it back. Eileen returned it to the biscuit tin. Then she closed the door, clicked over the latch, and turned to look at the piles of fetid nappies, chilled to rigidity on the stone floor. She looked at the empty grate where the fire should be, at the shrieking infant, pulling in icy air and bawling clouds of freezing mist back out over its grey blanket. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up. She put on her coat and buttoned it tight. She unlatched the door and slipped, slick as mercury, out into the rain, to walk where ghosts showed her the way. Later, Jim's arms warmed Eileen when he found her sitting in a pool of lamplight outside the dance hall in town. But they could not warm their blue and white porcelain doll and its cot when they returned. "Get a fire going, Jim. Baby's cold." "Aye, lass." Now they're standing clutching each other, she with empty eyes you could lose your life in, he with a face blank as moor's fog. They are the fleeting stars of a tragedy, picked out like burnished ectoplasm in the dancing light. Later they will make sense of it all, but I can see, I already knew, that they didn't need me. Wrapped tight in each other, they are already forgetting.